and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And today we're joined by Greg King.
How are you?
How you doing?
All right.
Greg, as you will know, if you've read the magazine recently, is a contributor. You contributed long ago, sort of much further back than the recent series we've introduced, which is A Day With.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, I did the odd piece for the magazine when Patrick was at the helm, actually.
Yeah.
Back in about 2020, I think, something like that, I started. And it was like the odd piece now and again. And obviously that's grown. And the last, I think we're into the seventh published article of A Day With.
Yes. So if you haven't bought the magazine recently, A, what are you playing at? And B, A Day With is basically what it says on the tin, in that Greg goes off to a well-known Land Rover company or business and sees what makes them tick, basically, behind the scenes. A really cool insight into how, sort of, I suppose you could call household names of the Land Rover world actually operate.
And I think it's quite, I've always thought it was really interesting, because I used to work at JLR, as these two gents know, and one of the things I used to love was going to see new suppliers or supplier visits. And then with A Day With, obviously there's such a big aftermarket scene within the Land Rover community, tuners, modifiers, parts suppliers. For me, it's utterly fascinating. And there's this whole world of Land Rover that exists that you don't normally see. So I think I enjoy writing them, and I think it's gone down quite well.
Yeah, definitely. We've had really nice feedback about it. So if you haven't already seen that, be sure to grab a copy of LRM and or subscribe, and you'll get every instalment delivered to your door.
And one thing worth saying, actually, is today is the Wednesday, and this is a new on-sale day, isn't it?
Yeah, there is a brand spanking new issue of LRM on sale today. So go to your local shop and pick it up, because we'd really like it if you did.
So, our bosses, we can carry on doing this.
There is something good. I always say it's my favourite bit of post each month is when it drops onto the mat, being a subscriber, obviously.
Of course.
We were saying earlier, weren't we, about, because I cheekily read the next lot of...
Cheekily, I think you're entitled to be ahead of...
reading it on a screen is one thing, and I read your latest offering, which is, on sale today, and you went to see Richard Chassis, didn't you? Given too much away. But I read through it, but seeing it when the magazine is in your hand is so much better.
Well, I'm not inside.
Yeah. It's when you open that box, it's a fresh mag.
I don't know, maybe I'm old school, but I do like printed press even now. There's something tangible rather than looking on the screen.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It's like a good book, isn't it?
Yeah.
So as you briefly alluded to there, Greg, you did work for JLR. Can you tell us a little bit about what you did, as much as you're allowed to say, and sort of what that was like? Because you were into some quite interesting stuff.
Well, an abridged summary, I suppose. I'm the son of a farmer, grew up in South Devon, and as a kid drove the farm high cap, sat on cushions. My favourite time of the year was the summer when Dad would be combining or something, and I'd run, we need more red diesel or whatever, and I'd go and fill up the diesel and run it up in the high cap, and it was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And I was just I think everyone's got a Land Rover connection, and that's mine. And then Dad got a new TDI, 200 TDI 110 for the farm, and he's been family friends with Roger Young, who's the main dealer down in Saltash, just over the Cornish border, lifelong friend. I mean, they've known each other, I don't know, probably 60 years or something. Anyway, bought this new high cap, and basically they said, oh, they're doing factory tours now. Do you and Greg want to go on a factory tour? So I went up to Solihull for the day, and this lovely lady called Molly Main, who's, crikey, she was retired, I think, when I went up there. So it was a very long time ago as well. Anyway, got me a So we do apprenticeships. I'll get you some information on it at lunchtime. And actually, it was a full application pack. So I thought, well, I'll just fill in the form and see what happens. And yeah, that ended up with me getting an apprenticeship up there. So I moved up to Solihull from South Devon, which was, yeah, big difference.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was at JLR from that point forward. So I worked on my first project at my apprenticeship was 50th anniversary. So when the NAS 90 was effectively made as a limited edition for Europe, brilliant project that was. I worked on TD5, Introduction into Defender, worked on Disco 2 for a bit. And then, you know, it evolved into becoming JLR rather than just Land Rover. I then spent a number of years on Jaguar programs. And then in the last few years, really it was, for me, the most interesting part of my entire time there, which was working on Defender Runout editions. So Defender Autobiography, all of the sort of bespoke commissions that were done. I was involved with like the 2 millionth and Paul Smith and just some really iconic Defenders. Fantastic. And for someone who's a Defender nut, it was absolutely brilliant. And then finally, the last sort of few years I was there, the Classic division was formed, and I worked on both Land Rover Reborn, and then my sort of swan song, I suppose, was Works V8, which was just brilliant. As a Defender nut, being, you know, able to work on that, it was brilliant. And yeah, I mean, obviously there's lots I can't tell you, but it was a fantastic program. And it was yeah, really, really interesting few years in Classic.
I was going to say, for someone who's, you know, a lifelong Land Rover fan, that's a pretty impressive back catalogue of cool, like, special models to get your teeth into, isn't it, really?
I think it's to be interested in what you work on. You know, you do everything with a passion. I think, I had a brilliant few years there.
Fantastic. I mean, you owned a 50th anniversary, did you not? You've had quite a few special Defenders, haven't you?
I'm a terror, actually, because you know, some people have a car and hang on to it for years and years and years. I'm not one of those people. The one exception is the grey 90 I've got. But I've had when I was at JLR and we got employee discount, I had a Defender SVX station wagon, which wasn't, there weren't many of those because we had a young daughter at the time, so of course I needed something with rear seats. So I had a SVX. I've had a couple of 50ths. I had a Puma that Bowler breathed on, which was fantastic. That was a really good bit of kit. Yeah, I've had quite a few over the years. Some for a fairly short space of time, some, yeah, longer than others. But I think I've now got a car that I don't think I'll ever get rid of.
Mm. Yeah, that's so your Instagram is Primer Grey?
Yeah, my Primer Grey 90. So when I first started at Land Rover all those years ago on the farm, we had a 90 TDI, and long story short, I took my test in that back down in Devon, and for a while used it when I could, like if it wasn't doing too much during the week, they would go, oh, you can take the 90 this week. So I'd drive it up from Devon to Solihull, because in my teenage years I'd go back to Devon quite a lot,
right?
And did quite a few miles in this lovely grey 200. It was just a really nice thing. It got sold, it disappeared into, you know, the ether, and you know, that was that. And then I finished with JLR in the summer of 2018 and actually took a 6-month sabbatical off, and literally the first weekend I'd finished, we'd got a holiday booked to go down to south of France, and I thought, I'm going to get a project, just something to tinker with.
It's the right thing to do.
Ask Martin how he knows.
Just picture the scene. So we've got like a camping trailer that we'd set up on the evening, and me is drinking like a glass of wine, reading a book, and I'm on Auto Trader with a bottle of beer. And it was actually on there that I was strolling through, and I was like, that's just like the old Grey 90. It's like, couldn't see the number plate. I was like, it can't be. Clicked the button, and of course, next picture, yep, it was.
Wow.
So the next morning.
The original one from back in the day in the barn.
Yeah.
So was it your dad's? Your dad ran it?
Yeah. So, right. I mean, but basically the next morning I'm phoning the guy up going, I know this is a strange story, but I'm on like the first day of a 2-week holiday in the south of France, but that's my old Defender and I'd like to buy it, please. And I can't see it. Yeah, no. So I took away all my negotiating tactical. But the guy was really good because he was a Land Rover. He was actually on a farm estate, but he was a proper Land Rover person, if you know what I mean, a proper enthusiast. And he went, look, I'm selling it on behalf of, you know, my employer, but, you know, you sound absolutely genuine. I'll tell you what, I'll take it off Auto Trader. And if you want, if you come as soon as you can when you're back in 2 weeks' time, and if you don't want it, can you repay the relisting fee? And I went, we can't.
But, yeah, that's fair too.
And
God, I bet that felt like the longest 2 weeks of your life.
Yeah. Well, and
it was holiday.
And I phoned up the insurer at the time, who a chap called Ian, who you might know anyway. And I phoned him up and I said, look, how much would it be to add to my policy? And he went, well, I may as well set it up now. I'm like, well, I don't know if I'm going to buy it. He's like, great. It's your old car. You're going to buy it.
Yeah, of course.
So anyway, so since that was 2018, so 7 years, that's definitely the longest I've had anyone's
brand. So I've known that forever.
No. So there was a big high, you know, there was a big gap, but effectively it was, you know, I sort of back in the 90s, and then obviously rediscovering it in 2018.
So that's really cool.
So you say you wanted a project. Was it much of a project then? Wasn't it much?
No. It's very original. But if I tell you that there was one advisory on the MOT when I got it, which was, and it was worded something like, underside, excessively soiled, unable to fully inspect all items. And that was an advisory.
Right, okay.
The MOT test has been wiping his tears away with £20 notes, is what you're saying.
And if it wasn't for a good friend who used to work up at Bowler, and actually he's got his own business now called Blackbird.
Oh, Michael?
Yeah.
Michael Brown.
Yeah, good Mike fella. Brown. He's a top chap. And the fabrication work that they do on their races is fantastic. But before he would started doing that, he had the car for a good few weeks. And if it wasn't for Mike, he managed to save what I thought was the unsavable, because I thought I was into reshatting and re-bulkheading territory. But it is all original and very, well, no, it's original chassis bulkhead repaired. But it's so full of dinner troll and wax type products, and I just keep on top of it now. So
yeah, no, that's cool that you managed to save the original chassis, because actually nowadays that's quite a desirable part of an older Land Rover like that.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because I sometimes think, well, should I have actually gone through that, or should I have re-chassised it? But, you know, I think, like you say, you know, if nothing else, you know, I should get a good few years out of it. So that needs more TLC.
Might need his phone number after this, actually. Oh, dear. So
why is that, I ask?
No reason. That must have been quite, you mentioned you had a couple of 50ths. That must have been really quite rewarding and fun to own a car that you'd had a hand in actually bringing to life.
I so want it. From the first time, I remember when I was on the project, and there was a lovely chap at Land Rover, a chap called Pete Armell, who sadly passed away a good few years ago. And Pete, anyone who knew Pete, he was a real character, and he was such a nice bloke, and he kind of really took me under his wing, because obviously I was a new engineer at the time. And I remember, I think it was for some sign-off work, like European exterior projections or something like that. But he said, oh, can you take this 50th down to Gaydon? And it was a German spec 50th, so it was left-hand drive with a speedo on kilometres. And at the time, I was running around in that said Gray 90 TDI.
Right.
And remember jumping into this and going down the M40. And if I say to you, I seem to be going past stuff quite quickly. And when I got to Gaydon, I actually had a look at what kilometres were mile an hour. And yeah, you are. But it was clearly just 70 miles an hour. But no, they were a great car. They were really just for me. I think NAS 90 and 50th, they were fantastic. But yeah, it was really nice to be involved in it. I had one, I think it was 2007 was the earliest opportunity. No, 2006 was the earliest opportunity. I bought one that had done quite nice. It had done about 70, 75,000 miles and ran that for quite a bit. And then we moved house and it was just a casualty of finances at the time.
Yeah.
And then back in, when would it have been? I think it was about 2015. I happened to come across one really locally, and it had done 7,000 miles from you. But basically, the guy who had it, I think his father had passed away. He'd got it. It had been basically in a barn for years, and he kind of really didn't know what it was, in that the whole conversation started by, oh, I've got a friend who's got this really unusual colour Land Rover. Oh, have you? Oh, it's awesome. So I went down to have a look, and it wasn't with any intention, but it was before the market had gone barn.
We never intend buying them, you know.
No, you don't. And I wasn't really in a position to buy it, and I just thought, you're never gonna get another opportunity like this. The problem with that was it needed very little doing to it. I mean, obviously I had every genuine fixing I rebought, because obviously things like the hinge fixings and things like that, and the roof panel, they tended to, you get lacquer peel on them, so the roof was repainted. There was a really localized area on the rear tub that was repainted because of a little bit of galvanic corrosion, but nothing much. And it was beautiful and it was lovely. And I kept it in the garage, and I had bought one of these Carcoon bubbles.
Oh yeah.
But the problem was, it was too nice to use, and it, you know, I had that only for a couple of years. And there's a friend I have who actually runs the 50th Owners Club, and he basically said, look, if you ever want to get rid of it for first refusal, and he did, because it was too nice to use. It's a beautiful car, absolutely beautiful thing. But with Land Rovers, they're there to be used, and if you don't feel that you can use them, for me, and it was just too much money to start using.
So does that one now get used, or is it?
It's part of a collection.
Part of a collection, yeah.
I suppose really when they're that low mileage, and in that, you know, apart from a few little cosmetic touch-ups, they're in that gorgeous sort of factory fresh condition. In a way, it kind of is the right thing to do, because if there was none left in that condition, it would be a shame.
Yeah, you're like a custodian of something.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Greg on this, because it's too nice to use, but it would stress me out owning it.
So yeah.
I would have to let someone else own it.
Honestly, that it kind of did.
Yeah.
Because it was just too nice to you, and you didn't feel that you could put any miles on it. And it was a lovely thing to have, don't get me wrong, but, you know, to be honest, I get far more enjoyment, as stupid as it sounds, running around in an old 200 TDI that I've got connection to, and I'm not precious about.
Yeah, I was at that.
One of the first times I met you, I think, possibly a similar situation, you might correct me, you had an absolutely gorgeous Tamar Blue TDCI station wagon, 90.
That's fairly recent one.
Yeah, so, yeah. Was it Tamar Blue? Did I get that wrong?
No, you're quite right. It was a base station wagon, Tamar Blue. Got it from, Terry Elliott down in Essex. It was a lovely thing. I think it sounds really bad. I think that was, almost I didn't learn my lesson first. Not quite the same, but again, I wasn't using it quite as much. I tend to use the 90 rather than that. I like Pumas. I do like Pumas. But I wasn't using it as much as I could do. And ironically, I know I said the last time we moved house, we were at that house for like 11 years. That was our second move. And the Tamar 90 will go whilst we move. I've done it. Yeah, I think lessons learned. But I think as enthusiasts, you do sometimes see something, you go, oh,
Yeah,
I'm going to have to, you know, dig deep. You know, this is for me. And I think sometimes it's better to have something that you can use and enjoy rather than something that you're too precious about.
No, I completely agree. I think if you're in that sort of luxurious position where maybe you've got space and money for something that you can stare and like sit and have a beer and look at of an evening, and also a couple of things that you can run around in, then brilliant. But you know, in the real world, you're going to get far more enjoyment and use and smiles and memories to that out of, you know, having something a bit older that's had a bit of work that you're not as precious about. It's the way forward, really.
Yeah, I know that what suits me is a car I use 365 days a year.
Mm.
I couldn't have a summer car that sits in the garage. For me, it's a waste.
What's sat in your garage for the last 4 years?
Yeah, that's not a summer car.
Well,
we're on the subject, right? Now, the dig that I always get, as Greg, you were listening to the podcast as well.
Oh, absolutely.
So you'll know that he always brings my unfinished project up.
Well, Greg's already had a dig, but before we started recording.
Yeah, no, it's on the best conversation was actually before podcast, isn't it? But some of it we can't repeat because they're, you know, well, confidential conversations. But
you're a busy chap, though. You know, the fact that that's been sat in the garage for how many years?
TikTok ain't going to scroll for it, say.
Nothing wrong with scrolling on TikTok, you know.
Go on, how long?
I've learned how to cook all sorts on egg now.
How long without activity has that 90 been sat in the garage or the shed?
Without activity, but it must be 4 years.
Well, however...
However, that has changed.
On the flip side.
Yeah, last Friday.
Things have happened.
Last Friday, and it will be on YouTube.
Yeah.
LRM's YouTube.
Fantastic. Actual proof that Steve's doing something.
Yeah. So before we did anything, I had to go and try and find all the nuts, bolts, spacers, washers, etc. that hold the transfer box of the engine and the gearbox of the engine, etc., etc. Did all that. And last Friday, we put it all in the chassis. What an achievement.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
One less thing sat in your driveway.
It's quite interesting. We were talking about last Friday, there was my mate, Pete. So we dragged him out of semi-retirement.
Yeah.
Mechanic of 25 years, Land Rover mechanic for 25 years. And we needed him, didn't we, to be fair? Because he recognised the modification that you'd need to make to put the handbrake from a early 90 onto a Discovery Fastener box, and he's basically drill and tap two holes, etc. He knew all that back of his.
Yeah, I likened him a bit to the Norfolk Garage, Richard Hall, who writes Norfolk Garage. They've both specialised in similar era of vehicles.
Yes.
Whereas I came into the game later, so I'm not quite as well versed in the little nuances of that sort of build. Whereas Pete looked at this. Pile of stuff on your garage floor and just went, yeah, I know where all that goes. And just
that goes there, that goes there. Have you got a washer that looks like this? We'll space it. Yeah, it's there. That's the one. Grab me two of them.
And to have help like that.
Oh, yeah, don't big him up too much because
okay,
it's costing me enough in beer as it is. But what I thoroughly enjoyed about last Friday was the fact it wasn't raining for a start.
Yeah,
because it was an all right day. But we had a laugh, didn't we?
Yeah.
We, at one point, as Pete was citing stories that I've forgotten about, of things I've done in Land Rovers that I shouldn't have done when I was 19, etc. There were tears rolling down his cheeks, laughing at old stories.
Funny, wasn't
it? It was really, really good, wasn't it? We had a barbecue, didn't we, for lunch?
Oh God, yeah, that was probably a highlight of the day, watching Steve pull his hair out because the barbecue was struggling, wasn't it? Because it was windy.
Yeah, it was. To be honest, I think the wind. I don't know why, but it's the first time I've used it. It's the first time I've used it this year. And I think the wind must have been in a different direction.
We did get a steak sandwich out of it eventually.
Yeah.
It was a long
while. In my mind, right, I had this ideal of we'll have a nice steak baguette whilst this engine. Meanwhile, Pete's going, girl, grab me this spanner. Can you grab this? And I'm like, I can't be in two places at once. I was getting a bit stressed.
That's Chef Steve.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a proper diva when it comes to cooking.
Hopefully you had a gravel drive. So that Martin could lie painfully in the gravel trying to scrabble around trying to find fixing fluid, like last time with your 109.
Yeah, actually, we did a lot of the work because it's a rolling chassis. There's nothing on top of it. Thankfully, apart from fitting the engine and box, the engine, which we did because we had to roll the chassis to the engine crane rather than the other way round, similar to doing the Series 3, there wasn't actually that much rolling around in the gravel. But I'm sure there will be.
We did compare gravel drives, right? So I could categorically tell you that my driveway is more uncomfortable than Martin's. because we've got the bigger gravel with sharp stones in it. I digged in. Yours is like the softer piece.
I learned so much about aggregate.
I remember.
It wasn't poking out my kneecaps.
I was on the podcast a good few months ago now, and I remember chuckling to myself so much with you, like this painful infliction of gravel on your back. So I was just trying to do the work.
If you shave all like this, like, you can get your shoulders and you can make yourself like a little well.
Yeah.
So if you're doing like the prop, if I go and put some grease in the prop shafts or something like that, I lay and I shuffle, get your shoulder blades, and you can make like a little well. It's quite comfortable.
We'll remember that next time.
Yeah, we're doing some work. Crawling around on gravel.
You just said it was comfortable a minute ago.
Anyway. If you're lifting something.
Things are happening. Yeah, we're forging ahead. A positive move has been made on Steve's rolling chassis. So keep an eye on the YouTube channel for that. And also other Land Rover related funsies, which we're going to be stuck into this year.
We've got quite a lot going on, haven't we?
Yeah, we're...
We don't actually have time for work. If we're in...
It's not really work, though, is it? It's all fun. It's fun.
Talking of. So, obviously, you've had these amazing projects with JLR, but have you done anything else Land Rover related and interesting in your career? Or has it been sort of in and out of different things?
Where do I say? I mean, a lot of that time was obviously devoted to JLR itself. I mean, since then, I've been working for actually one of the suppliers that supplies into JLR and like lots of other manufacturers as well. And I've also been doing a bit of work for a well-known, very well-established Range Rover modifier and tuner, which has been very interesting as well.
Interesting.
They've always been in my Land Rover's always been in my life in one form or another. So it's not just been work. I've always had something to interest me. Not so much recently. You know, we've done some fantastic like laning trips and things over the years. Need to redo that. Reinvigorate that, actually. We used to have a bit of a regular thing going on, but it's you know what it's like. You kind of stop doing it and you fall out of the pattern. But it is a good hobby. You know, it's a nice hobby, and everyone needs a hobby.
I agree. I'd love to get out and do more laning this year. It's sort of fallen by the wayside. But yeah, that's 100%. It's just so nice to get out there, isn't it? Especially when as the weather gets better. Take in that fresh air and just enjoy a day out with... I think the last proper trip we would have done was Peak District with Alistair, in fact.
Oh, was that when you first time you drove a Series 1?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a day that was.
Beautiful. It is a Plowman and I'm in now.
Picnic up a hill and drive Series 1.
No, it was a Plowman. It's not any old picnic.
All right.
Well, the last time I did a proper trip was in the Peak District, and... one of CKD Shop's customers, Rob and Alex at CKD Shop, that actually there's been a day with CKD Shop.
Yeah, really, really interesting. Yeah. Rob, an absolute hero.
Yeah, and
he's caning his 80-inch around the field at the
it was the same guy.
Yeah.
No, but Rob and Alex are fantastic. But the customer had actually just had a Lights Upon the Grill 80 restored through CKD Shop, and it's Chris, I all respect to this guy. He was like, right, he wants to use it. So we're going to join you in two 1948 80s. So there was Rob's 80, the one that you're talking about, where he was buzzing around the field over at Richard Hammond's event. And this chap, lovely guy, actually, with a restored 80. And it was a lovely summer's weekend. We stayed overnight up in the Peak District, and it was a lovely couple of days up there, but it was so nice to see something like that being used properly, you know, because that's what they're designed for. But, you know, I'm afraid I would have probably been a bit too precious, but I think that's fantastic that people are using, you know, really lovely restored 80s just as they should be.
Absolutely. Oh, I completely agree with you. I think actually, although what I said earlier about there being a certain, you know, number of pristine low mileage examples of a certain model, if you like a 50th or a NAS or whatever, eight like older classics like that, especially if they've got some battle scars and some patina like Rob's has,
yeah,
get out and use them, because they look, they will never look cooler than they do in the countryside.
Yeah, and you get so much enjoyment out of it as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, the good thing is, you know, you can use a, you know, can you name another brand of car which is 75 years old and you can still get all the bits and still repair it and keep it on the road? I mean, you know, aside from perhaps Volkswagen, there's very other few manufacturers that, you know, with elderly cars, you can still get all the bits like that.
No, I mean, I know Mini are quite good, but I mean, again, you don't see many of them on the road now, do you? Like daily, as you do Land Rover.
Also, they'd be 11 years newer from the start. I mean,
Series 59.
So it was, yeah. Series 2 would have already started.
Yes, yeah.
Series 1 would have been and gone by that.
They're like spring chickens compared to Land Rovers, aren't they?
Yeah, they rock quicker.
So moving on, you've actually got, you've obviously got your Instagram is My Prime Grey 90, but you've also got a YouTube channel.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
Well, I've been playing at it, I suppose. It's funny that you referred to this just outside before we were recording, and it was more than anything else because I had a load of old promotional films and things like that, and I just thought, well, I'll share them. And I know you stumbled across it the other day and went, it's great. But yeah, it's been sat there for a little while, actually. I haven't done too much with it.
It's actually brilliant. It's of the same name as your Instagram, isn't it?
Yeah,
so
it is.
My Prime and Grey 90, and it's like, if you sit down with a cup of tea, do not expect to get up for the next 2 hours, because there's the number of different, like, so nostalgic and like the memories that awaken in your brain from watching these amazing advertorial pieces on the various different models throughout the years. Absolutely brilliant. And to have so many in one place, it's like addictive to just go from one to the other all the time.
I've seen one or two of them, but I need to check them out, a few more out then.
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff on there. It was all the old sort of promotional videos that the dealers, you know, could share and whatever else. So
what would you say is your favourite promotional video of all time?
The problem is I'll say the one and everyone will just go, oh, well, that's the really well-known one. But, you know the car for all reasons, the Range Rover launch video? That is brilliant. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it. It's quite well, you know, it's around. It's been around on social media for quite some time. But it's the original 1970s launch from Range Rover, and it's just of a period, and it's so well done. I mean, there's lots of others as well. There's lots of kind of promotional films that, you know, haven't been that widely shared that are fantastic. There was another one done in the 60s as well, and I've forgotten the title of it. But again, I think it was done 68, 69, tail end of Series 2A before Series 3 came out, I believe. And that's a fantastic one as well. I can't think for the life of me the name of it. Anyway.
Check it out, right, please.
Yeah, man. Yeah, no. And if I'd actually done my research before I'd sat down.
I don't know if we were going to ask you
that. No, if you were going to ask that, I would have.
Well, isn't it? No, we're going to ask that question because this is all off the cuff.
I have to say, for anyone listening, I just outside before we started, it's like, right, so what's the format? It's like, well, we're just going to chat. I was like, okay, I really thought that you'd have a scheme of stuff that you wanted to go through, but it's
quite bold of you to assume that we're organised.
We often, don't we? We say, right, we need to start forming a plan, and then we get busy. You know, we're busy producing magazines and all the other good stuff, and then we go, yeah, let's go and record a podcast. I think it's kind of better this way.
But the thing is, I always say, there's that much going on in the Land Rover scene all year round. We're always doing something. We've got our own projects on the go. We're off seeing Paul. There's events on almost every weekend.
You're tremendously busy with all the events that go on, all the LRM events. I mean, half your year's gone with some things.
Yeah, exactly. So actually, that's a good...
Talking of...
Here's a little plug for you, right?
Greg, that was a gorgeous segue.
Yeah, thanks for that, Greg. So we're now sitting here...
Unintentional, but okay.
So this is going out on the Wednesday. So if you're listening to this fairly early on in, we are going to be at Ripon Racecourse this coming weekend.
For the... Yeah, LRM Autodrome.
They come round quickly, don't they?
They do come round. So this will be the second one this year.
Yep.
And then... So check out tickets, pre-book them online, because you can save some money. And it's great. I do love that one. North Yorkshire, on the race course. Not actually on the race course, but the grounds within the race course.
Horses just blitzing.
Yeah, no horses will be there, unfortunately. But it's great because I've said this before, but what we do get there is a lot of, let's say, call them old boys, you know, and they having proper clear outs of their sheds from Cumbria, from the northeast. And they come to that one, so they don't go to Newbury or the Malvern one because that's too far. So you get a completely different offerings. Grow the stuff that you see.
Over Christmas, I was having a bit of a sort out, and I've now got a pile of stuff, and there's more stuff that I need to have a bit of a clear out. So I need to get myself on one of those.
Come and join us,
days.
Yeah, come and join. More than welcome, and then you might have stuff I want. You never know. We'll do a deal off camera.
Can we talk about for a second? I think it's safe to talk about this now because it's happened and it's in the past. The absolute gem that turned up at Ripon last year, a 110 County station wagon that was for sale, I believe.
It was for sale. And
is that how it's loaded on the trip?
Yes. Well, so to Ripon, not far.
If it's on,
but I mean, not
it's gone.
Go on, Lee.
He said, how many people have you got? When he turned up on the Saturday, because the show is on the Sunday, he said, how many people have you got coming? I said, actually, we're doing all right on ticket sales. He said, good, because this is not going home. I said, so what if you don't sell it? He goes, then we have a problem.
For everyone listening at home, it is essentially a twin-axle car trailer with a 110 chassis. And you might not think that's anything particularly unusual, but then there's what looks like a fruit crate, and the body is about 4 foot above the chassis with ratchet straps holding it down. It's some of the...
That's sketchy.
It's terrifying and impressive in equal measure.
No, I was going to say, Greg, I took that picture in disbelief.
If you bought that, let us know, because we'd love to know what's happened with it, if it's being restored or if you...
Yeah, look, I think it came with an old book. I didn't even ask him how much...
The body there is a 110 station wagon, and it actually looks pretty...
It's not awful, is it? Like, the B-pillars and everything look okay from a distance than the picture that Steve sent me.
That's its best colour, Pennine Grey.
Well, there you go, at my Primer Grey 110.
Do you know that what was a little bit concerning, right? So we were on site on the Sunday, and most of the trade had gone, and pretty much all the public.
Yeah.
And one of the last things to go was that, and it was left there on the trailer. No one around. The owner was gone. Everyone had gone. And I thought, this might be our problem here.
Yeah.
Who's been left? Fortunately, he came back and said, oh, no, the guy's just getting something to tow it back with. Mm. I think it was fetched from somewhere fairly local and it had gone back somewhere.
I was going to say, hopefully they came back with a separate trailer to put the body on. I'm
sure they did.
Yeah, they definitely did.
They did. They did, yeah. They...
Lucky you see Veerbosa.
Yeah, got towed away properly.
Moving on.
So Ripon coming up, be there because it's such a cool one.
Yeah, definitely. It's like Steve says, it's a completely different set of, well, it's like you say, it's far enough away from Newbury and Malvern to be a completely fresh selection of goodies from people's sheds that they've probably forgotten about until they've decided to have a clean out. And hidden gems all over the place.
Yeah, a lot of farmers. So they turn up. They've just been milking the cattle, and turn up with auto jumble. So it's just brilliant stuff.
And I have to say, the last time I had a sell off, it was down at Newbury, and I think I had a clear pitch by sort of lunchtime, and it's great because you go for a wander and
you meet up.
I love those events, and it's not so much about if you're going there to buy or sell. I've gone to Malvern and Newbury. I haven't actually been up to that one you just said, but and you just meet up with people and you have a coffee and a catch up. And you might end up buying something, but that's not the reason we're going, because they are a great social event. It's like a mini wanderership.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a result at Malvern on Malvern Spares Day, which was the maiden voyage for the recently rebuilt Series 3. Basically, I took all the stuff I had left over, like the old truck cab back and the some old parabolic springs that I've had for years and never got around to using. And what else did I have? Exhaust manifold, bits and pieces like that, and yeah, just put them around the front and accepted offers and didn't know how to do anything.
Yeah, brilliant. I think that's a sort of perfect reason to take stuff up to an event like that. But as the 109 running, because that was a fairly big maiden voyage for it.
Well, I thought I'd driven it around locally, and mechanically it's exactly the same as it was when it came apart, so I thought it can't be that different. And apart from I had a slight issue with the because the engine, by my sort of choice, I've made the engine sit slightly further over to the driver's side. The clutch slave cylinder bracket was just touching the inside of the transmission tunnel.
Okay.
So it was transmitting an awful lot of noise.
Yeah.
So apart from sorting that out, which was basically moving the engine about 5 mil across to the passenger side, and one other thing, I'm going to replace the leaf spring bushes for polyurethane ones because they're a bit noisy. Other than that, I can't fault it. It's absolutely brilliant. I'm off camping in it this weekend.
I have to say, after the level of work that was done on it, I know you say the powertrain's kind of untouched, but that's brilliant because, you know, it's nice when it all goes back together and just works.
Yeah, I was expecting, I don't want to jinx it, but like a lot of other people, I expect I have like a list either on paper or on your phone or whatever of bits you need to do, like little things to look at on your Land Rover. And I every time I notice something new that I need to tweak, like the passenger side door doesn't shut very well now, so I need to adjust the striker where it's all settled into place. But other than that, like it's been pretty good. I can't, touch wood, I can't fault it. That'll be your 90 soon, Steve.
You need to find something else to do now.
Well, yeah.
I tell you who I'm quite keen on them getting to mine to help.
Go on.
Is Neil.
Yeah, yeah.
Neil Watson, right? So watching him, because I obviously did a lot of the filming of Martin and Neil's work.
Steven Spielberg. Oh, yeah, that.
Yeah, yeah. I was like a producer and cameraman all in one.
Good, they're really good videos.
Yeah, they're good.
Brilliant.
You know, there's quite a lot that goes into it, actually, getting the right angle and showing enough detail and being entertaining. But that aside, just watching Neil work is really calm.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm like, within, like, 2 minutes, like, something might go flying because I'm a bit feisty when it comes to stuff not going right. But he's like, oh, well, let's try it a different way.
I think you have to be of that mindset.
Yeah, he's got a different personality.
But I think you're ex-Land Rover fully qualified technician, you've got to have patience, because
you certainly do have.
Yes, have patience and work with me.
Yeah, that's probably why I'm so good at it.
But it's like fault finding and being methodical. You know, it's not when stuff going together, it's when there's an issue and it's like, okay, what's the root cause of this, you know, and actually working out where you need to start, because there's no point in chasing around an issue.
Neil is the man. He is methodical is the word for Neil. He looks at the big picture. He narrows it down some more, takes his time. And you just, when he's doing that, you just leave him to it, because you know that he knows what he's doing.
He's buying himself some thinking time. And yeah. You can see him looking and just analysing it. And even if he's gone down that rabbit hole and then that's not solved the problem, he starts again. Whereas I would be like, that's it. I mean, I'm done. Walk away from it.
Because some of the wiring on my 109's bulkhead had been bodged in the past. Really, it needs a new main loom. I fitted a new chassis loom as part of the rebuild.
Yeah.
But the plug on the new chassis loom, some of the pins didn't match up because the previous owner had repaired and bodged and done some stuff with the main loom and it didn't quite match up. Things weren't going as smoothly as we'd hoped. And I was obviously, we had limited time, as with all these projects, we have limited time to get everything done. So I was off doing the mechanical stuff and Neil just went in the zone, blinkers on, just sorted it out.
We had limited daylight as well within the day.
Well, it was winter, wasn't it?
Yeah,
depths of winter.
Oh, it was freezing cold. Cold to the bone.
But actually, circling back to what we were saying the other Friday when we were over yours fitting the engine and gearbox, we're actually likened it a little bit to the Revs Restore project.
Yeah, so I said about that Revs Restore. I bet this is because didn't we feel better after it?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a really good project, that was. So I know you guys, you ended up sorting out the rear axle, I think, on the Revs Restore. You came down to see what was going on, but that was a good project. So based out of Bicester Heritage, restoring a 109 that I think had started, or it spent a good chunk of its life out on the Falkland Islands, and hence calling it Stanley. That was a great project, and it was just people chipping in, you know, volunteering for the weekend, just nice, relaxed, and people loved doing it. And the good thing about that was you had people that had never, or not just worked on a Land Rover, they'd never been on the tools, and like showing people you know how to do jobs on. They thoroughly enjoyed it. And or you could just come along and chat and drink coffee. It was a nice, relaxed project, that was, for the Revs charity, or non-for-profit, sort of mental health type, and sort of general well-being, sort of project. It was brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, so we, like Greg said, I only made it to a couple of the days, but we covered it in the magazine, the different stages of the project. And it was essentially a bunch of people, whoever wants to come along, it was totally open, come along, have a chat, chill out, drink some coffee, eat some cake, get stuck in with the project if you want to. There's no pressure. Like you say, all different skill levels, wasn't there, from people who've never picked up a spanner to people who are, you know,
trained mechanics. Classic car restore, you know, like got their old, not necessarily Land Rover, but, you know, like, had an MGB or an old Jag or whatever, but you know, and yeah, it was really good, and it just had such a good camaraderie, you know, probably even better than laughing at Martin when he's got gravel in his back.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I can't argue with that. It was really good fun, and yeah, it was really, really nice people, a really diverse bunch of people, and of all age groups and all, you know, backgrounds, and it was just good fun and lots of cake, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah. He likes a couple of cakes. We've given up on Two Cake Tuesday.
I think it's for the best.
Two Cake Tuesday.
In the podcast, when we first did the podcast, this is a Two Cake Tuesday.
Well, we were doing it on
Three Cake Thursday.
Yeah, Four Cake Friday.
Yeah, things got out of hand. As you see, we're slightly larger than we were a year ago.
But yeah, I think it's probably for the best that we dial back on that sort of thing.
Yeah,
I mean, again, it was highlighted, like I say, when we were over yours with Pete, just get together. It doesn't matter what you're doing, spannering, green laning, drinking tea, meeting up, just...
Yeah, we had the tea flowing, didn't we?
Well, tea was beautiful.
But I think, you know, yeah, I mean, whether it's Land Rovers or whether it's, you know, another car brand or whether it's, you know, some other hobby, I think, you know, to have something that you're passionate about and brings people together, that's the fun of it, isn't it? You know, and the Land Rover scene, it's as much social as it is anything else. You know, I've made an awful lot of friends through the Land Rover scene, you know, not, you know, excluding the JLR side of things, you know, the club side of it, general get-togethers, and made some really good friends along the way. So, you know, if you're thinking of buying one and just listening to the podcast, get involved. There's so many good sides to it.
Talking of, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, Greg. We had a really cool email the other day, and I'm going to read it out. We sort of don't focus as much on readers' questions, listeners' questions, when we have guests on generally, because you're far more interesting than we are.
I'm not sure about that.
But this one, I couldn't not read out. So this is a guy from called Just. He's up in Scotland. He says, hi, guys. Day one listener to the podcast, despite not owning a Land Rover yet. He says, I've made the somewhat foolish decision to travel on the train from the south coast to Wick in Scotland. Sorry, so he's down on the south coast. He's going up to Scotland. Circa 700 miles to pick up my dream Land Rover, a 110 double cab pickup, which I'm going to drive home.
Brilliant.
Do you have any advice on what to take with me, bearing in mind I'll only have a hand luggage-sized case? So he's going on the train. He hasn't got loads of room. It's going to be a crazy adventure. Any advice, gratefully received. Love the show. Juss from Fareham in Hampshire. So, Greg, completely springing this on you, because we haven't prepped you for this question whatsoever. If you were going to do 700 miles in a Land Rover that you've never seen in person before, what would you take with you?
Well, it's a double cab, so we'll assume it's TD5.
It will be TD5 or TDCI.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I'm assuming it's going to be an 81. I would, as silly as it sounds, I would take a half mil socket drive with me, so I can just check the oil levels on the diffs and the transfer box. I'd take 13 mil spanner with me, so undo the level plug on the gearbox and check the gearbox oil level. And just check the levels on the car. If you don't know how to do that, there are so many sources of information. I mean, Defenders are nice and easy to work on in any case, but check the levels on it. That would be my one tip. And just be sympathetic to the car until you get to know it. So, and just keep an eye on it, you know, generally just keep an eye on, you know, temperature and things like that. I mean, on TD5, they will derate if they start to get hot, so it's fairly obvious. But I think it's just a case of, I always think you sort of build confidence with a car you don't know. You know, you get to know it. You know, just take it steady and enjoy your drive back. But yeah, I think for me, it would be half mil socket drive, a 13 mil spanner, and just check all the levels on the car before you get going. And yeah, just take it easy. Just take a nice, slow cruise back. It might be 700 miles. It might take you a good while. But no, enjoy it, because they are fantastic things.
See, Greg's answer was so much more constructive than mine.
I liked your answer, though.
My answer was, I saw this question came in yesterday. Breakdown membership. And
snacks.
And snack sauce.
Let's be fair.
I was a credit card for fuel. That was my three things I would take.
I suppose, you know, if you're committing to buy a car that's that far away, you're going to have a reasonable amount of. I'd like to hope you would have asked, you know, yeah, when was it last serviced, things like that.
So it's a project. This could be a 2015 double.
She could be a brand spanker, basically.
2015 is still like 10 years old now.
Yeah, brand new Defender in the grand scheme. But Greg, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. As long as it's been, you know, it's not overdue a service by 3 years, check the levels, make sure it's happy, take it easy. I replied to him straight away, like, just to thank him for his email. It's all about, especially if you've not owned a Defender before, coming to terms with how one behaves. You know, if you're coming out of a stand like a Golf or something, it's so different to drive, you might think something's wrong with it, when actually it's just how they are.
I think actually driving a Land Rover of any vintage, even you know, later Defenders, I think it teaches you so much. I think it teaches you mechanical sympathy, because to drive a Defender smoothly, you need to be gentle with it. And I think, you know, there's a with modern cars, there's so much technology to you know, mask, you know, poor clutch control or whatever else, because you've got like shunt control and things in them. You know, a 9110 Defender, well, go back before then, you know, they're pure. And I think, you know, it teaches you a level of, I think you become a better driver for driving an old Land Rover, because you have to understand how things work.
Yeah, I agree with you, actually. I think that's very, very, very good point.
We were just saying before the podcast, about young drivers and whatnot. And I think actually, if you had, well, I mean, my daughter's coming up to taking a test, and you know, she wants to drive a manual so that she could drive the Defender. And I think actually driving a Defender will you know, it makes you a better driver. You have to think about things. I think, you know,
stopping distances and,
yeah, exactly,
cornering and, yeah, speed.
Yeah, it's like a modern classic car, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to say, as we've said before, my first car that I had on the road was a 200 TDI 90. And that was like, You know, when the bias spring in the gearbox gets a bit off and the gears aren't where they should be.
Yes.
Trying to drive a nine...
Stirring a bucket of bricks.
Well, it's not like they're notchy, but the you know, when you if you've got the gearbox sat in neutral, you push it forward, it goes third, you pull it back, it goes fourth. It should be in the middle.
So you have to feel for the
gear. You have to, like... Yeah, yeah. And the LT77's already fairly notchy, so you can imagine, you know, you... New driver out of the road.
Very close to first, isn't it, on an LT77?
Yeah. Desperately trying to find gears. I think if you can learn that and you can get over the fact it's not incredibly precise steering.
I think it also brings you patience as well. If you've ever driven a early Range Rover with the LT95, the four-speed.
Yes, I've owned one. Yeah.
And, you know...
Slow.
Yeah, exactly. You know, despite the fact that you've got quite a powerful V8 and, you know, they've got reasonable turn of speed, you know, you have to be considerate for, you know, the synchromesh in the gearbox. You have to just change slowly. And I think it's things like that, you know, now people just don't think of in modern cars.
I quite like that gearbox.
They're basically the toughest gearbox in the world. I mean, they're in 101 as well.
And stage one, has a stage one. First and into second.
They've got an even wider gate. How
they Well, they're enormous. In my head, it's sort of like...
It's like a lorry.
Yeah, it is.
It's a lorry.
But that gearbox, I think, I'm sure listener will correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that gearbox was actually engineered for the 101, like for the military vehicle.
Yeah.
And it was just, we need a gearbox that's got torque, low, you know, torque allowances that would be suitable for Range Rover. Well, we've got this gearbox, we'll use that. So I think it was a massively heavy-duty gearbox for the application Institute or Range Rover, I think. There's nothing... It's actually a very good box. It's just, as you say, you just have to be slow and sympathetic with it.
I'm just thinking, I've owned that gearbox three times.
In what?
A V8 110.
Oh, yeah. Early V8 110. Yeah.
That was LT95.
Yeah, because they launched in 83 with it, and it wasn't until 90 came out in 84 that they then put the Santana LT85 speed.
It's, that was quite an early... I should have kept that.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Was that a factory V8?
Yeah.
You sausage. What did you sell that for?
Well, because... Yeah, don't...
We can all say that.
Do you know what, though? When I got that, and I might have told this story on the podcast before...
Yeah, we have all done it.
That vehicle was 1983, white, off-white, with Gav Cappin's, but the diagonal...
Yeah. Oh, we couldn't tell you.
Can't remember now.
It had got the original lift-up doors, but with the...
Yeah, the angled window.
The angled window. Bow windows.
Mm. Oh, it was a proper early one.
What?
Like that 110 pickup that's on Facebook.
Yeah. God, when you shared that with me.
I'll show Greg quickly.
For the
record, I'm showing Greg a Facebook Marketplace listing of a 1983 110. Oh, no. Did I tag you in it? Yeah, I did. Which has been used on a farm extensively. It's got dumper tyres. There isn't a straight panel on it. It is a really, really early... Okay, it's an 84. It's got a 300 in it. But it's got the slidey...
Yeah, blank. That is like the first model year of one. So there might be 84 registered. That's early.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's... Apart from being hanging.
Yeah, it's battered to hell, but it is, you know, it's a lovely thing.
It's got a Galv chassis. It's got dumper tyres. The body colour with the white cab.
Yeah.
So that's how you know it's... Another reason you know it's early. But what a thing to save if you could. The chassis is going to be fine. But...
Yeah, I mean, I have to say... Anything a Land Rover running around on dumper tyres, you know, has had a...
100%. If you fancy it, it's got a 300 TDI engine and gearbox in it, and it's up on Facebook Marketplace, where it probably isn't by the time you hear this, but £3,750 if you fancy yourself a project. But it will need a tub by the looks of it, at least, because it's
yeah, early. It's
had a bit of a life.
But I mean, this is the thing. I think, you know, Defender stopped, you know, original Defender stocked in January 2016, and I think, you know, that the fact that that's up at that sort of money, you know, they're always going to be in demand because you've got a finite... there were 2 million made, but they're always, you know, there's now a finite number, and they're always going to be in demand. I mean, it, you know, the fact that there's so many going out to the States, and that shows no sign of slowing down. People, you know, love them.
Yeah.
That must have been the day, Greg, the 2 millionth one across the out of the assembly line. Can you tell us a bit about that?
There was a few highlight days over the years, and I think 2 millionth and obviously the final defender off the line were two of them. That was great because you had people both involved within defender overage or 91-10 and series before that, you know, involved in building that car that sort of came out of retirement. You also had sort of celebrities that had a connection with Land Rover in one shape form or another, for example, you know, Bear Grylls, the chap off Dragon's Den, who Theogathetis.
Oh, yeah.
And a few other people there. I mean, Roger Craythorne was there as well, and effectively they all contributed into building the car. So each different area of the build, you know, you had, for example, you know, on the dash build area, there was one person. I remember Theogathetis, I think, bolted in the rear seats from memory, or he was certainly on the rear tub area. And it was great, you know, seeing all these people involved going down the line. And there was a real sort of almost carnival atmosphere as this car went down the line. Absolutely brilliant. There's actually quite, because that was, I suppose, I say comparatively recent, it was 10 years ago, 2015.
Crazy
time. But there's a lot actually online. If you have a look at the 2 millionth Land Rover, there's quite a lot of content. You'll see who built it and whatnot. But it was very much the same feeling as the sort of last day of Defender production. And that was a real carnival atmosphere. Were either of you two there on that day that Defender
last again? I was a lowly tech editor, so I didn't get the info.
Okay.
But my boss at the time, Mike Goodbun, would have been there.
Well, I was there.
Were you?
I was there with Pat.
Were you?
Yeah.
I would have walked past. Probably not.
I didn't see that.
No. Well, as I say, it was sort of 9 years ago.
What a day that was.
It was amazing.
It was amazing. To be, it goes down in history, doesn't it?
It was the last one off the line, Roger Craythorne soft top.
No, it wasn't. So that's now down at the Dunsfold collection.
Right.
His was, I can't quite remember. I think his was like three or four, I think a bit less than that, maybe three cars before the final Defender off the line. The final Defender off the line is actually at JLR Classic. So that's as part of their collection, H166 HUE. So that's actually a Grasmere green, you know, the final Heritage Edition colours, whereas Rogers, I'm going to sound really geeky now, whereas Rogers is actually Keswick green. So his is like a standard spec but built, the magazine have featured it as a Cypriot built soft top.
Yeah.
Whereas the last off the line is effectively a bespoke soft top heritage, if you like.
Okay.
So they were subtly different, but yeah, a few people think that, but no, that final car is actually held by JLR Classic. So
got you.
Yeah, there you go. But no, it was a great day. I mean, I was really privileged because Mike Bishop, who you obviously know well, who's over at JLR Classic.
Not as well as I'd like to know him. I think we need to get over and podcast him.
He'd be great to get on here.
Yeah. So, I'm guilty, actually. I did mention it to him a little while ago, and then sort of, you know, life and work happened and I've not got back to him yet, but I absolutely must go and see him.
But no, I had the privilege on the final day. There was a cavalcade that went round the Solihull site, and I was fortunate enough to drive Mike's pre-production round site as part of that. And then there was a cavalcade that went down to the BBC studios. It was on the One Show in the evening, and it was brilliant.
Oh,
because
yeah.
It had been on the news all day, like mainstream news channels, you know, the final Land Rover Defenders being made, you know, after, you know, from 1948 till now, you know, last day of production. So it was like on BBC News and things. So we drove down the M40 in this cavalcade, and literally, it was amazing because literally every car, lorry that passed us, because we were trundling slowly, we were going as fast as the slowest car in the cavalcade, and series ones aren't very fast on the motorway. And everyone was waving. It was just the most... It was an amazing day, and you could never repeat it.
We I spoke about this last week with Pat.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Because he was there with me, and Sky News interviewed him.
Oh, by the gates, I remember that.
Yeah,
yeah.
And they said, "Oh, and here we have Patrick Crowagan, editor of London Monthly," and then on Sky News, and this is when Pat was going through his UK farmer look. So he had his barber jacket and his flat cap, which isn't like clothes that he would ordinarily wear, but he wanted to fit in, you know.
So he's spending too much time around you.
Basically, yeah. Anyway, so he stood there, and they're asking him like questions about, you know, the economic situation with Land Rover, and he was like trying to answer. They didn't know that what Land Rover Monthly magazine is about in comparison to Land Rover as a company. And yeah, he did really well, to be fair to him. Really well.
Yeah, I must look that up, actually.
It
just seems like yesterday that I was on LRO at the time. It just seems like yesterday that was being, you know, that was massive news.
That was over 9 years ago. It was the 29th of January, 16. So, yeah, it was over 9 years ago, and I cannot believe that. I think I'm just getting old.
So when we left the factory, we were in the factory building watching it. Then we got transported somewhere else, and we were in some Defender 150s.
The Land Rover Experience have stretched.
Yeah, stretched like limo. And I was in the back, right in the back, and there was like a few, I don't know, journalists, people they wanted there. Next thing, like Vicky Butler-Henderson jumps in, and I was like, what is it? And Quentin Wilson. I was like, this is so random, like the most random
thing. It was a lovely day in that everyone just mixed. You had all the media. I remember some sort of faces that you'd know from the BBC and whatnot were there as well. And everyone just mingled and chatted, and it was a unique day. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I think the most, you know, heartwarming, the most encouraging and reassuring thing is that love for Land Rover, love for Defender is definitely not dying out. If anything, it's getting stronger.
Because we've said this a number of times, we were concerned from our perspective, from a magazine perspective, that was the end of enthusiasm for Land Rover. But it has got stronger, and the Defender thing hasn't. People are still producing parts.
Yeah.
New
people bits are keeping, and pieces, you know,
for Defenders, particularly.
The effort and time into making them last as long as possible, because there never will be any more.
No, I mean, there's still companies of evolving. I know your rear tub has now gone off to, it's now Phoenix.
Yeah, Phoenix Automotive.
Phoenix Automotive.
The rear hub, and we're going to go feature that.
Yeah,
because I've supplied the panels essentially, and we're going to put it together.
Where I was getting to, it was kind of like companies like that, you know, if you'd said a few years ago, you're just going to have a company specialising in rear tubs, but because people are keeping their Defenders on the road, there's a place for this. And, you know, circling back round to the day with, so I've been writing, you know, it just shows how diverse the Land Rover aftermarket scene is, because you've got, you know, basically, I think everyone wants their Defenders to last forever now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really, really good.
I mean, you talk about that early 110 just a second ago, that's on eBay. That would ordinarily be broken for spares.
Yeah.
It's not. Now it probably won't be. But my V8 110 that I bought 15 years ago, at that time, wasn't rare. And it was either a parts car or re-chassis job. And it was a re-chassis.
I was talking to a friend a couple of weeks ago, because as I mentioned, you know, I grew up down in the southwest, and I was a member of the Cornwall and Devon Land Rover Club. And at the start of each trialing year, you'd have the new trialers built for that year. You know, it was always good going to the first one of the season. And when I was a kid, you'd go there and you'd have this lovely, you know, 80 lights behind the grill 80 that had been, you know, effectively a Range Rover, probably a Suffolk A Range Rover, and been bobtailed and shortened to 80 inches and bodied in this 80. So in that process, you know, there's been probably an A Suffolk Range Rover cut up, and the lights behind the grill 80 cut up, and a trawler built. And you just go, oh my God, but you forget back in those days, you know, they were like a few hundred quid. You know, what? No one thought anything of them. It's changed beyond all recognition.
Give it 20 years, people will be going, oh, that's a 1998 late registered Discovery 2 that's still on standard suspension. Like, that would be worth an absolute fortune.
There's an absolute standard Discovery 2 in my village on an X-Reg.
Mm.
And do you know what? it looks like a classic car now because it's original. It's in daily use.
My brother-in-law
it's mint.
Had a S-Reg, Woodcoat Green, Disco 2, and it was that early when he took it to get remapped at Empire, it was. Gareth did a great job eventually because the ECU was so early and the chassis number was so early, his equipment wouldn't...
Oh, it was too...
The original ECU.
Silly.
So he had to have... We had to sub it out for a later ECU to map it.
I have a real soft spot for Disco 2 because I worked on it for a bit, and my first company car through JLR, or when it was actually Land Rover before, I think it, Jaguar had sort of been integrated, I had a Disco 2 ES Premium, and it was brilliant. It was just fantastic, and it had that single DIN sat nav unit that was just in black and white. But that was state of the art at the time. They are really well rounded cars. I think they are, for me. I know you've spoken about what's the next big thing. You know, is it going to be 38A, etc. And they are starting to come up, particularly, you know, the company registered early cars. But I can see, you know, give it. I think definitely Disco 2 is sort of starting to go that way. They should do. They're a really good, well rounded car.
100%. They will have their time. Will come definitely. I can see it. Well, we're probably about ready to wrap up because I think we're well over an hour. Greg, thank you so much for coming and having a chat with us. It's been really good to get an insight from your sort of Land Rover world and your exploits within the brand.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and hopefully I haven't now put off an entire listener. But no, thanks ever so much.
No, really, really appreciate you making the trip. And yeah, I think that's about it, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah, and it'll just be me and you next week.
Probably, unless we manage to rope someone else in to come and join us.
Yeah, who actually put your recommendations on a postcard, editorial@lrm.co.uk. Who else do you want to see or hear from on the podcast?
That's a really good idea. I should give you my list of who I think should be off.
Yeah, do it. So this, do it. 100%. Right, until then, we will catch you next week.
Bye for now.